You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Oh. Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 194 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and you can probably tell that my voice is a little tired. In fact, it's quite thrashed after spending the entire weekend at the CD Baby DIY Musician Conference in Nashville. It was absolutely amazing. Such a great weekend. I got to meet so many of the artists that listen to this podcast, so many of you out there listening. It was awesome. And what a great weekend. So good to get the artist community together. And there was amazing content. Lots of good stuff happened. There were some real conference success stories, not just artist stories that, of success that they had going on in their career, but some real artist success stories, some connections and things that happened at the conference itself that were very, very cool. I'll probably have Chris on the podcast in the next week or so to kind of debrief everything, hit on some highlights, and talk about some of the cool stuff that happened there. But such a great event. Next year, August 24th through 26th, the conference will be at the same place in Nashville. Information about tickets will be coming soon. So start making your plans. It really was a life-changing event for many artists. And it's just so great to be together with so many artists who just have this great artistic energy about them. So this episode that you're about to hear was the live podcast taping we did at the conference. And the session was called Why You Never Need to Tour Ever. So in it, Chris and I are going to break down what you can do if you're an artist who has been discouraged by having to go tour, or if you're an artist who just can't get out on the road because you have job and family commitments, or just don't want to, frankly. So we're going to address all these in this episode. I think you'll enjoy it. It has a nice energy. It was so much fun to not be sitting in a room by myself all alone recording a podcast, but be in a room of 100 people who are really excited to be there. All your energy and smiles made it extra special, and I can't wait to do it again. So here is our live podcast taping from the 2017 DIY Musician Conference. Enjoy. All right, we're going to get started. But how many podcast listeners do we have here, DIY Musician Podcast fans here? All right, excellent. Well, as you know, it wouldn't be a podcast without starting with some theme music. So here we go.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician
Podcast. Get a little clapping going, get a little energy. We've got some, what's the trucker hat? We've got some trucker hat. There's more up there. All right. Well, welcome to the live taping of a DIY Musician podcast at the DIY Musician Conference here in Nashville.
Wow.
I'm Kevin Bruner, and this is Chris Robley.
Hey.
Thank you. Not only is it exciting to be here with you guys, but it's actually exciting to be doing a podcast with Chris in the same room with me.
I know.
In the same state.
If anyone doesn't listen to the podcast, I live in the other Portland from this guy. So
yeah. We're CD Baby's in Portland, Oregon. He's in Portland. It's confusing. But yeah, if you saw that opening intro video we did when Tracy Maddox opened up the conference, you saw a little video of us at CD Baby. I was actually recording our last podcast when they did that, and you saw me in the room all alone, and that's how I normally do this. So it's really great to have you guys. I met lots of you here. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I was thinking this morning that we've got this session that we have scheduled, but I was thinking next time we should just wing it, because there's so much has happened in the last 3 days that I wanted to talk about a whole bunch of different things. And this is the banter portion where normally people get mad at us for talking too much. but I have to share a story that happened last night that was unbelievable. Were any of you at Hillbilly Casino last night, or the showcase last night?
Oh my God.
That was mind blowing. those of you that missed it, your life is worse for it because it was amazing. But anyway, I was standing at the side of the stage, and he had this part where, you know, he pulls out this flashlight. But there, at the front of the stage, there was this railing, and there was this person standing on the rail right in front of the band, head down, just texting.
Is that person in the room?
We should find out first, because I don't think they were very happy.
No.
But anyway, they were down, head down, texting the whole time. And the lead singer pulls out this flashlight, the high-powered flashlight's part of the show. It was pretty cool. And he's just waving it across the crowd, like almost like a strobe light. Then he stops and just points it right on her.
And keeps pointing and keeps pointing.
And everybody in the front is just staring at her, and she just... no idea. Just had her head down, and the whole front, it was just insane, this amazing show, and just had no idea that the whole world was staring at her at that moment. And she was busy on Twitter. And I know this because right after that, the lead singer threw some water. It hit her and other people.
She looked up.
And she had a few gestures the rest of the show and started a Twitter battle. So it was pretty amazing show. But I had to share. It's one of those stories that we have to share on the podcast.
She thought it was beer, but it was
water.
It was
not beer. It was water. So you good?
I'm tired, but I'm good.
Do we need to have a therapy session for you this time?
No, I'm cool. Usually I need some sort of soul encouragement, but I'm good today.
All right, excellent. Well, we're gonna discuss the topic at hand about why you never need to tour ever. And apparently there's a session over there about how to make the most money from touring. So we got the folks that are too lazy to go on the road over here. And those that are motivated, there's another session for you. Yeah, that's right. I can, you know, you can tweet and do stuff from bed, and you don't have to get out of the house. So anyway, what we really wanted to talk about was, you know, there's this idea, all these headlines that now artists have to make money from touring, and the world is ending because artists have to tour. And really, honestly, that's always been the case in my experience when, you know, growing, being here in Nashville, when Small Town Poets, we were signed to a label here in town, that's what you did. That's the only way you got a paycheck. So that's not this new thing that is like artists have to tour to make money. But the funny thing to me is it's the exact opposite of what's going on. There's so many ways that you can actually make money by not touring. And so we wanted to highlight those. It'll be more of like some idea session. We'll have a little idea session here.
Before we have ideas, I have a question.
What?
If the money is in touring, then why do bands need tour support from their label?
That's a good question, because I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll get smarter people to answer that for us. but really what, you know, when we were talking, Chris and I were talking about touring, you know, as independent artists, if you've been out on the road, we've probably all been on the same tour where there's like one good show and four really bad shows. And one on the bubble. And then you go, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. And you get back and you're broke and you didn't make any money. And you're thinking, why do I keep doing this? They just keep telling me I have to do this.
And well, like, yeah, you have to pay your dues, like, in order to get press. And, you know, like, someone like Ben Hubbard on our team will talk about the importance of touring in terms of pitching to people like him that have access to editorial teams at Apple Music and all this stuff. So it's like, you got to go on the road. But that also means you're going to just do a whole bunch of really shitty tours that are soul-crushing to, like, build your tour resume and spend a bunch of money to, like, you know. And also, while you're constantly touring to build your resume, it means you're totally unemployable. So you're giving up.
Were you employable from the beginning anyway?
My first job was selling Christmas trees, so I can always return to that seasonally.
Mine was working at a daycare, which is pretty scary. True story. So we just thought, let's acknowledge that going out on the road is hard and sometimes confusing. And there are amazing tours, and there are some really, but most of what people think about touring is like this big tour bus with a giant tour that's got a lot of support behind it, that's having a good attendance. But as independent artists, we often find ourselves in that place where we're doing gigs and feeling like we're just spinning our wheels. So that we want to put that out there and acknowledge that there is usefulness in touring, but that there's you don't have to do that.
Yeah, one thought on that before we move on. I do think touring can be great for like camaraderie amongst people you're making music with. You're having these awesome adventures. They are great to get tour press, which can be helpful. You get tight as a band. Plenty of good reasons to do it. So
most of my best stories from my life are while being on the road with my bands. Funny enough, most of them don't have anything to do with the shows, though.
Although they have to do with Walmarts, right?
Well, we're going to go there. That's where we're going today. All right. And, you know, and acknowledging the fact that it's getting increasingly harder to get people out to shows. I mean, there's Netflix. Am I going to leave the house when I got Netflix and things? I mean, me personally, I figured it was time to brush up on my world history and started watching Game of Thrones. So I just started doing that.
Yeah, and that means also if you're leaving home for some stretch of time, then you've got to fill Tuesday night and Monday night and Sunday night to make it worth it, and you're competing with Game of Thrones for real. And so why do that when you could have an alternative?
Yeah, so we're going to talk through some alternatives, and we'll probably try to move quickly so we can leave plenty of time for questions. We don't have any calls today or emails to read, so we're relying on you guys to bring the questions.
Or ideas about what they might be doing as well.
What?
We want their ideas as well.
Oh, yes. Yes. So we're going to start talking, let's talk about live streaming. We've actually had a podcast recently about live streaming that was great. Sort of last minute for this conference, a company here in Nashville came on board to live stream a lot of what's happening in the main room. So if you go to our Facebook page, CDBA Facebook page, or the YouTube page, there you'll see a lot of those. And so it's been cool to actually start engaging with live streaming as a company, and they've looked great. This company's doing like multi-angle stuff, and they have a lot of software powering it. So I know that's not something that's going to be you'll have access to at home necessarily to live stream. But so let's talk about live streaming.
Let's do it.
What's the best?
I have a beef about live streaming. I love it, but why are the camera angles always so crappy? Like, if you're gonna be doing a broadcast from your couch, like, don't put the phone down there so I can see your double chin and, like, have a little pizzazz to the setup. It doesn't have to be, you know, a Hollywood studio, but.
Yeah, and the benefit of live streaming, you know, we're gonna talk about YouTube in a second, but with live streaming, I've seen a lot of artists where they just do a scheduled live stream with their fans, and it could be a couple quick songs. It can be, you know, a show. I think the one that's the hardest to do with technology right now is to do a good representation of your show. And that's where I see, like, on live streams, I'll see somebody where the camera is like next to their pedal board and their giant image of their backside while I'm live streaming. Well, you're seeing the live stream, and it's not that engaging or pleasant, but try to think about, you know, if you're not going to be playing shows, how can you engage people just in Facebook or YouTube right now? It could be chit-chatting about something. It can be playing a couple songs. It doesn't have to be this one-hour program. And sometimes it doesn't even necessarily have to be scheduled because a lot of times the beauty of the live stream is you're just catching people in context, you know, incidental people just on Facebook, probably should be working, and they're on Facebook instead, like, oh, there's this live stream, interesting. So the idea of like engaging folks, knowing that they may just have discovered who you were, and so it's important to like say your name, speak to the people that are watching.
I definitely like the serial content nature of that, though. If people do have scheduled, you know, cover song Tuesday or whatever, and original song Thursday, or maybe it's over the course of a crowdfunding campaign, it's like, I'm going to talk to you every day and tell you something new about the record. Or I like when it's, I can expect
I like the idea of cover song Tuesday. And, yeah, you can make themes out of it, make something that people start looking forward to, and you know, and to encourage, if you're trying to encourage your fans to participate, you know, try to do something to make it interactive, like the first people that start commenting will win something or get access to something. Because the idea of a live stream is that you want the people watching to start communicating with one another and socially interacting, because that's going to help expand the audience there online and reach more people.
I agree.
Oh,
did you already plug the Facebook Live session from yesterday? Which you should all watch on Facebook Live.
Yeah, Rick Barker, that Facebook Live session that he did yesterday is on, it live streamed, and it's still available on our Facebook page and our YouTube page, so definitely check that out. He was one of the ones that really got me excited about the opportunities with live streaming when I met him in Nashville last year.
I have one request, too, if you're doing some sort of live streaming, is that, you know, if you're watching in Facebook, a lot of times you'll see the video, but you're not listening to the audio. So, you know, have some sort of card or something that says what the person is about to hear when they put the sound on. And don't just start right away. Don't be like, okay, I'm on, so I'm going to go, because people are missing that first chunk. So give them a little time to invite them in.
Yeah, and don't feel silly or like it's too much to keep saying your name over and over again, because people are probably jumping in and out constantly. So you got to keep that mindset when you're doing a live stream that this isn't a group of people that came and sat down to watch something for a long time. They're probably just scanning through and seeing a few things and then moving on. So keep plugging yourself. The other thing with live streaming that you can do, you can search online and find out that, you know, stats of like, when are the most people on Facebook? And it may be different than you're thinking. If you start thinking about live streaming, like, I'm going to do my show at 7 o'clock on Facebook instead of going and getting a gig at a club, that may not be when everyone's on Facebook. So strategically, you know, they have stats you can find online. When are people on Facebook the most? It may make sense to do this at 9:30 a.m. when everyone's getting to work and looking at Facebook instead of getting down to business. So there might be opportunities that are different than what you're expecting. So that's something to consider with live streaming.
Yeah, and then I think there's at least two ways of thinking about the purpose of these. You know, you could just be live streaming for free and to build your crowd. I mean, obviously that's always the point of it, I guess. But then at some point you can monetize these things through, you know, PayPal or Venmo or, you know, just whatever kind of tip jar you want to set up, so it can generate that income for you once your audience is big enough and they've come to expect it and really get excited about what you're doing.
Yeah, I wouldn't get so wrapped up with like, how do I monetize this from the get-go? Figure it out, start trying it out, mess with it, test certain things, and then after you get good at it, then start figuring out, all right, how do I get these people on my email list? How do I opportunities to monetize this. I'm sure there'll be more and more options that will pop up in Facebook in the coming years that allow these type of live streams to be monetized more fully. So just get good at it, engaging, and focus on the art and craft of engaging with your fans in that medium, and then start worrying about how am I going to drive this to build fans and revenue. Because if you start there, chances are you're going to not be so great on the performance side and just ruin the opportunity. Let's move on to YouTube. Did anyone catch some of the sessions with YouTube? Excellent, excellent. We were very appreciative that they came out to the conference and showed their support for independent artists. So one of the things that we see artists making a lot of money and building tons of fans is when they understand the YouTube platform and use it properly. I know some of the things seem obvious when you're talking about it, like actually titling your videos properly and things like that, but we see people just blow this right and left all the time, and the artists that are making lots of money and then that's spilling, you know, their YouTube activities, just like driving their whole career, are the ones that basically do everything that those YouTube folks said exactly like they say it and do it right.
Lots of keywords, because that's what's going to, surface your video and recommended sidebar of lots of other videos.
But if you want to use YouTube as a platform, as a way to drive your fan base and your core fan base, it's totally possible. I would say having a mix of some cover songs is helpful, but it doesn't have to be. But you really need to think about yourself as more of like, this is a TV channel. How do they program TV channels? And one thing that YouTube is a big proponent of is telling your audience when you're releasing videos. And there's this YouTube channel, it's not a music channel, that I've seen that just popped up and got tons of subscribers really quickly, and they have this nice little thing over the bottom, and every video they say subscribe, and there's a subscribe button, and the videos come out on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, and it says it right there on every video, and it just makes it real easy to build that habit. It's kind of been a habit for me to go, oh, it's Thursday, there's a new video, and just really dialing in that platform of YouTube can be a great way to build that audience without having to go on the road. And it's funny because a lot of the artists that we've seen having success this way, distribution has almost been like an afterthought. Oh, I should distribute my music and get it out there. And they're like, oh, I can do other revenue streams like make CDs. That's what the story with Ninja Sex Party was. That Tracy Maddox, our CEO, mentioned. Is like those guys weren't even distributing their music. And they're like, oh, I guess we should do that. And suddenly they're making tons of money. And then, oh, maybe we should print a CD. And then $500,000 came in. It's just crazy. So it is totally possible when you use these platforms right to build an audience that drives real revenue without having to go on the road. Those guys, I think they've played like 5 shows ever.
Right. I mean, I think the cool thing about with YouTube, you get to concentrate on both kind of the more spontaneous live streaming aspect if you want to do that, but also it's obviously the place to archive all of the music videos or live concert footage that you've really put time into, like making intriguing and, you know, edited well and all that stuff. It's, as you said, it's kind of like your TV network.
Yeah. And there's a couple other platforms that sort of we should give honorable mention to, but I haven't really seen anyone at the indie level do it over and over again to success, but There's still time. There's Stage It and Concert Window, and that allows you to sell tickets online to a live broadcast of a concert. And I've seen major label artists do it with some success, but I'm hoping those platforms continue to develop and become something where people can potentially sell tickets to a really cool event. I think YouTube and all these free platforms have been powerful enough that limiting the potential by selling tickets hasn't been as attractive, but, you know, there's still time.
Yeah, I'm forgetting what the word I used for this was, but there's kind of almost an accidental nature to when you're using Facebook Live or YouTube. It's kind of like those people can just casually, you know, come in and out as they please, but, like, you have a way greater chance, I think, of capturing that interest if it's on one of those platforms where you have maybe thousands of friends or thousands of followers, as opposed to, you know, if you're at a smaller level, Concert Window attracting to a scheduled event that's, you know, very more formally set up. So,
you have anything else on YouTube before we move on?
Oh, okay. I'm good.
YouTube is good. Use it. That's it. All right. Now we wanted to talk a little bit about marketing online. And the interesting thing is, you know, when you think about it, going on tour, at least, you know, when you're talking about tour support and what the major labels over the years have looked at tours, they look at it as a marketing event. It's a reason for people in a certain town, the press, to write something. It's really just a reason to trigger a lot of activity around the artist. So if you're not going to tour, you just need to find those reasons to trigger activity in a city or with press or online. And so it's a matter of just getting your brain thinking differently than I just go play these shows because that's what I'm supposed to do. But really, when it comes down to it, especially in the internet age, it's just an event that is a event that triggers things. And so how do you create that event that can trigger some press and interaction?
One thing I was thinking about is if you're suddenly deciding that you're no longer going to tour, or you're not going to put your energy into that, now you have all those weeks open to invest in whatever solution kind of resonates with you, whether it's YouTube or live streaming or, you know, some sort of really cool marketing campaign that becomes a hook for press.
Yeah, so I wrote, marketing doesn't have to be about promoting a certain event. You're just trying to get fans to take a certain action. And I think where a lot of artists go wrong is they only think of the one action, buy my music, and or follow me on Spotify. Two perfectly things to ask your fans to do. But that gets really boring really fast. And we're supposed to be creative people. So come on, let's get a little more creative. We have this platform that we just purchased and made available to all CD Baby artists called Show.co. And it is unbelievable. It is so cool. And the reason I love it is because it allows you to easily make a campaign that you get some action you want the fans to take, but it allows you to make it more interesting and just really, it's more formulated like a marketing page should be. It's like, I've got this thing, I want somebody to take an action, and it's clean, simple, and easy to use. Yeah.
And tell them about your SoundCloud unlock?
Yeah, I'll tell them about the SoundCloud unlock. But first, before that, the interesting thing is when we bought that platform, there was all these major labels using it for all these crazy campaigns, like Britney Spears used it to give away a onesie. Oasis uses it constantly. They just used it to give away tickets to Noel Gallagher is doing a show in October. So it's really geared at, hey, I've got this idea of something that would motivate my fans to take action. So what's the action I want them to take, and how can I make it interesting for them so they'll happily do it over and over again? So for us, my band Small Town Poets, we don't have the ability to tour that often. The band's we're all over the South, and then I'm in Portland. And so I'll fly in to record and write and do some shows. But really for us, it's like if we want to engage with fans, we got to do it online. So using Show.co, I did a campaign recently that was very successful. First off, I had this old audio recording from back in the day when we used to do this medley of 70s songs. And if you're not familiar with Small Town Poets, we used to play the church circuit a bit. And we did this medley in the middle of our set. It was amazing. The best thing of the night. And that was actually one of the things that Tom Jackson worked on us with. Not the medley itself, but like kind of structuring that moment of where at the right point of the concert, where at that point it didn't matter what we do. We had the audience. They were eating from the palm of our hands. But one day we were on the stage and playing the song to about 4,000 people. The lights go, or the sound suddenly, I'm like, something's weird with the sound. Somebody's talking to me in the monitors. Suddenly the monitors go off and I'm just playing, and our road manager's on stage, and we got kicked off the stage for playing cover songs in this church. Some melee ensued backstage. It was amazing. I love it now. It's one of my favorite moments now looking back. But so I had this audio recording, and so I thought, I want people to follow us on Spotify. That's the action I wanted them to take. Our fan base, when we were more popular, was in the total CD era. So getting these fans back into, you know, the digital platforms to help, you know, drive these algorithms that will help our music discover new fans is important. So I went to show.co and I created this landing page, and the title said, "Hear the song that got us kicked off the stage. Follow us on Spotify." And so when they followed us on Spotify, it gave them access to a SoundCloud link where they could hear the song. So it's, and we got tons of people clicking through it, got shared a ton on Facebook. And all I did was post it on Facebook, and our Facebook page only has like 5,000 followers, and so it got shared a ton. People thought that was intriguing because it was something for them. It was like intriguing for them. It wasn't something that I just wanted them to do so it'd benefit me. It's like, here's a interesting nugget. Did you know we got thrown off the stage for playing this song? Like, what did they do? I've got to hear this now. And so as artists, we should be more creative and think about, we're creating tons of content. What interesting things can we do that will get people to take action online? And that way we grow our fan base, we grow our Spotify follows, and we get people to do what we want, and which is listen to our music. So it's that platform, show.co. If you haven't used it, definitely check it out, because it is so cool to do those things. And it makes it fun because it's super easy to do them on the fly. And so I kept digging around. What else do I have? They loved that one. Now I need another good story.
Right. You had the mystery and the hook there. I feel like as people, however you're communicating with your fans online, there's a tendency to think towards the end result. Like I was mentioning this yesterday, like it's all focused on announcing the release of some music or, you know, oh, we're getting ready for this video or whatever. So you're always pushing people's imaginations into the future, which is this promise that eventually they don't care or they forget about, or, you know, you have a delay and your record comes out 3 months later, whatever. The end result is not so important in that moment. Like you want to do something that's like, this is what I'm doing now. This is the drama of my life. It can be about the process of getting to that result, but try to think a little bit more about, capturing that moment. Like you're in the studio and your guitar pedal breaks and you're super frustrated and you throw it against the wall. That's good enough of a moment to just share that, you know, without the context of we're making this record that'll be out in November.
Yeah, this is something I'm always telling my band members about. Like, every post does not be, we're in the studio, new record coming soon, because our records are never done on time. So that new record coming soon, we're like 9 months behind. So forget the new record coming soon messaging. They get it. I'm in the studio. There's a new record coming. Say something interesting about that moment, like the gear or the emotion or what happened. Don't worry about like trying to tell the complete story all in one moment. Use it each moment by moment to create this engaging storyline that no matter what you're doing, that if you know you're not on the road, you can't tour, that it's still interesting to follow along with this band. I'm like, I'm curious, because every time they post something, it's really intriguing, or I'm drawn in some way, and it tells this story that I want to follow along. I don't want this story to end. I don't just want to jump to the end. I want to be along for the ride.
Well, one really cool tool that you can use for that kind of communication is Pandora's AMP artist marketing platform. They have this, I think they're called, is it AMPcast? Is that what they call it?
Yes.
It's this sort of voice memo thing where you can record these little 15-second snippets of audio and then determine which Pandora listeners are going to, you know, hear that. You can put it before or after a particular song or just after your music in general on the platform. You can geo-target it to be like, you know, whatever, if it's regional specific, that's maybe less important if you're not touring. But what I was thinking of is like when I was first testing it out, I said, oh, I have a video for my song Silently. So after Silently, after someone hears Silently, I said, hey, did you like the song? Check it out on YouTube, which is cool. But it's, again, I'm just asking someone for this, you know, thing to have the end result instead of me engaging the audience in a way that's like, oh, thanks for listening to my song Silently. By the way, I was about to vomit from eating too many Skittles when I recorded it.
Is that true?
No, I'm just making that up.
Do you have a Skittles problem we need to talk to you about?
No, but you know, like there's, sometimes it's more just make the connection, don't make the sale, or don't try to always be pushing people towards a result. I think that's maybe more important than ever now.
Yeah, you know, I've mentioned on our podcast a bunch, the podcast Song Exploder. I think sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it's a huge disappointment because artists just talk about, yeah, we just did this and then I put a keyboard and there's like no emotion, no intrigue, no story. And it's like, I'm not interested in finding out that there's a keyboard part here because I already can hear the keyboard part. yes, I know that at some point you added a keyboard, but find those interesting things like the human experience of being an artist. That's what, you know, when people are they're very intrigued by artists. They don't understand what we do. They don't understand the magic. They don't understand why we decide to do what we do. And so just revealing some of that can be very intriguing. Just talking about that there's a bass on the song isn't intriguing. And I think if you're going to try and engage with your audience online, the more you can weave a story together, everybody wants a good story these days. Everything's storytelling. So if you can tell a good story, you'll build fans and you'll start seeing things happen with your music. We need to move a little faster because we're going to run out of time without for questions. And by the way, I'd love to afterwards to get a giant group photo of everybody here and with you guys. So a couple other things quickly. I did a Twitter listening party for Small Town Poets a couple months ago as the 20th anniversary of our debut album. It was a huge success, and it got people engaging, talking, retweeting. It was pulling other people into the conversation. It was a ton of work up front, and all I did was I had for like each song like 5 or 6 bits of trivia and links to like YouTube videos behind the scenes or official music videos, and I just had everyone at noon hit play in Spotify on the album, and I posted a link to each song in time with when it should be happening. I had 2 things of Spotify going, and all this trivia, and it was quite the scene. I was like breaking a sweat because I'm like posting stuff, answering tweets, but it was extremely engaging, and all the fans were like, I can't wait till you do this again. And so even just trying to figure out, you know, like an online listening party, Twitter's great for that platform, and it was a lot of work up front. I had TweetDeck open with all these columns searching keywords around our band because people started using all sorts of words, and we had a hashtag going. And that was an amazing way to reach far more people than probably our last couple shows. So,
right.
So it was one of those things like, hey, what? It was like, last couple of shows were like, eh. But we just reached like tons of people, and people retweeting, and it just had a lot of power. And so it took a little work up front and some planning, and that really engaged people online.
Do you have playlists on there as a...
Yeah, we talked about the Eclipse Survival playlist.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, any kind of theme for playlists that's you know, upcoming and going to be very topical is a great opportunity to position your music in an interesting way. And we won't get too much into the weeds about playlisting because we've talked about it a lot this weekend already.
And Charles's session just in the other room was great, and it was live streamed, so you can go back on YouTube or Facebook and check it out.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, if your song is perfect for a playlist, what does it matter if you're on the road? I don't think, certainly the lower tiered curators, you know what I mean.
The little people.
They oftentimes just want great music, and if it fits, then who cares about that resume? And I also, to kind of amend a comment I made earlier about Ben Hubbard, our label relations guy, saying that touring's important in order to get the ear of some people. That's true in general, but if you have built up a huge following on YouTube and you've never played a show, that's a cool hook, too, that he can use for that. So, like, if you get these results by circumventing this whole touring thing, that story is going to be even more impressive, I think, to eventually get the same result.
Yeah, so there's, you know, YouTube calls them tentpole events. So there's certain things we all know come every year, holidays or events that people we know get online and start searching for things. We were joking about having an Eclipse Survival playlist or something, or, you know, that's something that we all knew was coming. Everyone was talking about it. I know if you lived in Nashville or Portland, because it went right over those two areas, it was mayhem. That's all people could talk about and think about for the last 6 months. And so it's like an opportunity. How can I create something or package my music in a way that taps into this thing that's happening? And you will see far more shares and people talking about it online when you look at the world that way. People are talking about stuff, and if you can contribute to the conversation with your music, it doesn't mean you have to write a song about it. For our band, we had lots of songs that fit in with the themes around Easter, and so the week of Easter, we sent a Song of the Day email, and it was incredible to watch our top songs on Spotify completely shift day by day as we were sending those emails and people discovering deeper cuts in our catalog, because most of them weren't the hits. And it was really cool to engage our audience and enlighten them to our music under a different theme. And so that's something that you can do, that if you look at your catalog and go, there's a lot of different themes going on here. How can I repackage stuff? Yeah, there's albums, but I can take songs from different albums and make something different out of them that might fit perfectly with various themes that people are talking about.
And if you want to get this guy to listen to your song, put it on a Christmas playlist, because he has an endless appetite for holiday music.
It's true.
I don't. It's a bit like gorging in the Christmas time.
Hey, but I keep it between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'm not one of those sickos in October listening to Christmas music. Although recording Christmas records in the summer is an interesting thing. I had a thought and you totally made me lose it now.
You're welcome.
Let's see. We said that. We said that. Yeah, I think we're good.
Right.
No. So let's move on. Oh, no, I know what it was because you mentioned Pandora and I wanted to get back to that. Pandora and Spotify, I'm very appreciative of what those platforms are doing by allowing artists access to a lot of data. And Pandora's been doing some really cool stuff with the tool he mentioned. Is that the one that, did they change the name of it and allow longer? I know they just added something new.
Well, I don't know what the new one is, but there's a way to take multiple voice amp casts or whatever they're called and kind of create these campaigns. So the story grows over a period of
time. Okay, yeah, that is newer. Because originally it was just like, you had like 15 seconds to say something. And it's really hard to say something engaging in 15 seconds. But yeah, I'm really appreciative of those platforms. Like if you've got music doing well on Spotify, be on that. Speak to those people. You know, just engage with them there. Chris just posted an article on our blog, the DIY Musician blog, about an artist. She's actually here. Michelle, you in the room? Okay, I can tell. I can use real numbers then. Don't tell anybody I said this.
Wait, this is going to end up on the podcast, though.
All right, maybe you can just
see us.
You can use hand signals.
Okay. That's too complicated.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money
every month just from Pandora alone. We're talking multi six figures just from Pandora. Not touring, not doing a thing.
She does play live, but it's not like she's not like a road warrior at all.
Yeah, but I first was talking to her, you know, and she said how much she made a month from Pandora. I said, I'm like, excuse me, I had to have heard you wrong. She said it again. I was like, oh my gosh, I should have been a piano player because there's certain platforms like Pandora where certain genres do extremely well. So it's important to pay attention to these things because there may be opportunities for your music that if you go mine the data of what's happening there and see, oh, I didn't realize this song is doing incredibly well on Pandora. Maybe there's an opportunity with this song and that you wouldn't have thought about or other
Michelle McLaughlin or McLaughlin?
I don't
know how to pronounce it. But
I think it's McLaughlin.
McLaughlin. Another similar story that we always talk about, Perrin Lamb, who made $56,000 in a very short amount of time from one song on Spotify. He doesn't tour either. I don't think at the time he was even playing live at all.
I met Perrin the other night. He's delightful.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little about live performance. Because, you know, we're talking about touring, but that doesn't mean you're never going to play live. I mean, if we're saying I can't tour, I'm not going to tour, they're probably playing shows occasionally in your local scene. I know in Portland when my band Hello Morning, we were playing the scene a lot. It was like, you know, you could probably only get a good gig once every 3 months because you could play more if you wanted to, but those are going to be like just the coffee shop that doesn't care that you played last night down the road. So, you know, if you're in your local scene trying to play at good gigs and build a following, it's, you know, once every couple months is about all you're going to be able to get. And so how can you use that to your advantage and make it so much bigger than just that one event those people in the room?
And again, if you're not putting all this time into touring or playing lots of shows, you can use that to make this one local show a huge event, get photographers there, do all the local press, you know, maybe have a videographer who can, so you can get all this stuff that later, you know, makes it look like you're on the road because, oh, there's a cool concert video or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and we were talking, you know, that so many artists sort of look at, I'm playing shows, what am I going to get paid? How much money am I going to make? But if you're playing...
Even how many people are going to be in the room as a primary concern.
Yeah, and if you're playing once every 3 months and that's all you can do, that's not going to pay the mortgage anyway. So strategically, you need to start looking at this thing differently and what the point of it is. And it is, again, it's that marketing event that can trigger certain things. And not only that, it's a story piece that can be used to tell a much broader story online. So whenever I'm playing and a show's booked, one of my first questions is, can we get a professional photographer there? Can we get somebody to take some really good video?
Is there good stage and lighting?
Is there good stage and lighting? Can I capture content in a way that makes it look maybe bigger than it is?
Which is why I brought up worrying about the number of people in the room, because really if the purpose of this is to perpetuate your story afterwards, as long as the camera's pointed at you and not at the empty room, that's less of a concern. I mean, obviously you want to be playing to people that are enjoying your music, but sometimes...
And it does take some coaching. People tend to stand in the back, put up their phone and video. Hey, I got video of you guys. Great. There's this big empty room, five people, and then way if you squint just right, you can see the band. Perfect. Can't wait to put that on YouTube. So it does take some coaching. I'm always scoping out the room, looking at how the room's set up, and when people start coming in, I always tell the person, if you stand right here with the camera here, it looks like there is a ton of people, because all you see are heads, and then you see the stage, and that's far more impressive looking than standing at the side, seeing the half of the room that's empty, and it looks like nobody's there. And so just being strategic with those things about, I'm trying to capture an event. Playing is important. I want to communicate to the people in the room. And I would love every show to be jam-packed and it just be amazing. But I'm looking for some other strategies of why we're there in the first place, to use it to tell a broader story. And when you start thinking that way, even if you can only play one or two shows every couple months, it starts feeling like online, like a whole lot more is happening. And there's a lot more compelling things. And then, you know, like, you know, Ben at CD Baby talking about, if you want to get featured on Spotify, or if you want Apple Music or some of the other services to feature your music, like when it's released, that how they tend to go, well, are they touring or what's going on? If they see that it feels like there's this story of a musician making art, it's far more compelling, regardless of whether or not you're on tour, than a website that has one band photo repeated 100 different times all over, because it looks like you guys showed up to do a band photo and that's the last thing you ever did together. So it's all about storytelling and creating the experience of that you are an active artist doing stuff.
Yeah, so that's kind of one way of looking at playing a local show, making it a big event. Another way of thinking about playing locally without touring is to find a way in which you can play all the time, but kind of be a little bit more of service to something else besides just your music. Like, there's a guy named, I think his name is pronounced Ruck, Dave Ruck. Does anyone know if I'm right in that? Anyways, he's this brilliant guy who's found a way to make a full-time living, never really leaving, you know, a place he can drive to in, I don't know, half hour. And he'll play historical societies and art galleries and schools. And it's not like... you know, what you're thinking of as like an elementary school assembly musician. He's great. And he's playing music he likes. He just finds a way to make, you know, tie it into the historical context. Or, and I think he did like the bluegrass influences of the Grateful Dead. So suddenly he gets to play music in that and have some educational component. He could play, you know, nursing homes. He could play some movie theaters while people wait in line. You know, there's so many ways in which you can earn an income outside of just going to the club and performing your music for 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, if you're looking to try and boost some of those local gigs, one, you should check out Gig Salad and sign up with them, because a lot of those kind of gigs are available through their platform. But you should definitely connect with the folks in like your city organizations, because a lot of them have budgets and they have no idea what artists are out there. Like, I live in a small town right outside of Portland, Oregon, called Camas, Washington. It's a quaint little Mayberry-type town. And they have events downtown all summer long, and they get, like, the same three bands to play. And they have for years, and it's because the person at the city who's responsible for booking them, that's probably the three artists they only know. And it's like, just go to those people and introduce yourself. A lot of them have budgets and have ways to connect you to doing some cool stuff, performing in your local scene, that it's not a rock star moment, but it does help pay the bills. So those are other opportunities where not having to go on the road and leave your family that do exist in the community, and that, you know, are not only can pay, but can be very rewarding as well.
Yeah, and particularly with this guy, Dave, like a lot of the most lucrative opportunities, you know, are happening at noon or 9 a.m. So he's always, his sort of shtick when he pitches this approach is, I'm always home for dinner. So that's a pretty cool thing if you want to watch Game of Thrones. Which tonight, please come to our after party and then watch it when you get home and just stay off Facebook so no one ruins it.
Oh, right? I'm still in season three, so no spoilers, people. No. Actually, I don't care. You've already been telling me spoilers. I don't mind spoilers. I kind of like them. That's some of the tips and advice we had. I want to leave time for questions. Really, the ultimate goal, whether you're touring or playing shows or doing stuff online, is just to get people interested in who you are, interested in your story, and interested in your music. And so you just got to think about things that way and not look at it going, I'm supposed to go play shows, I'm supposed to go on the tour, go on the road and pay dues, even though it seems like I'm not accomplishing anything. You don't have to do that. You have access to the world from your computer. Get creative and just think about, what are cool things that I can do that express my artistic person and get people interested in my music, and you'll see good things start to happen. All right. Anyone have any questions? I think we've got a microphone up here, so it'd be great if you could actually jump up to the microphone for a question. And as a reminder, please don't leave. I want a group shot of everyone that... with Chris and I, so we can say we do have real listeners to our boss.
My first thing I got to tell you guys is the podcast has been a huge resource, and I've ran into so many people that are like, there's a podcast? So that would be my big suggestion, is like, a lot of people that are here, they found out because they're distributors and they saw an ad or they distribute through you guys, and so definitely tell people about this. It's been a wealth of information. And then you mentioned the angles. You can buy those cheap selfie sticks, and a lot of times they'll actually unscrew. And there's a tripod holder for your phone, so you can put it on any tripod. So that's something we've been doing to get better angles. And then my question is actually about the virtual reality live stream. I listened to a podcast recently where they're going to be live streaming like sporting events and concerts, and they'll have multiple angles on a stage. Have you guys heard anything about that coming down the pipeline, where you actually would be like sitting on stage next to the drummer, you know, looking around? And is anybody working on that you know of for indie level?
Didn't Adele just...
Yeah, somebody just did that. Honestly, I think my opinion is that could be just a cool tech trend that comes and goes quickly, because I could be totally wrong. But for listening to music, I think it's very disorienting to be there, and like you have to wear glasses and point your head. It starts feeling very unnatural. So I think... Yeah, it could be cool. Like years ago, U2 did that 3D concert. Like you could go to movie theater and see it in 3D, and they had angles from the stage, and it was supposed to sound like you were at that part of the stage. And when you're looking at something like that and not experiencing it for real, it can feel very disorienting. So that's why I'm like, I'm still not sure that is going to be a viable thing for all artists. I'm sure an Adele or U2 can sell that, and it's like, oh, cool, they're going to do it. But as far as it being something that really people gravitate towards, it's funny with virtual reality. I went to Six Flags last year, and they've got some of those on one of their roller coasters, and I absolutely hated it, ruined the whole experience, because it didn't enhance anything. It actually took away from it. So I think it's one of those tech things that everyone's going to do, and then reality is going to set in, and we'll figure out what that looks like then.
When this isn't exactly virtual reality, but last week I was watching a YouTube video, you know, the 360 view YouTube videos, and I was scrolling around, and I was like, after like 20 seconds, I'm like, I don't care what the ceiling looks like. I don't care what's on the floor. I really don't care what his guitar pedals are. I just want to hear the song. So the fact that I
could look
anywhere.
Hold on. I'm a little slow this morning because it's been a couple late nights. You said you don't care what his guitar pedals are? That's the whole point for that angle.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question.
Hey, guys. I'm Jotham David Parker. I'm a Christian electronic artist from Washington. I posted your picture to the 90s Christian music recovery group on Facebook.
Excellent. Thank you.
And they all knew who you were, so that's pretty good.
Yes, we're all still in recovery together.
So I had a question about different streaming platforms. You mentioned YouTube and Facebook Live. What about Twitch or I can't remember what the app is out here. Twitch Hitbox?
Twitch is actually incredibly popular with the gamer community.
Yeah. I'm involved in the...
It's funny that I was laughing that there's this whole website where people just sit and watch other people play video games. But when I was on the road, half the time I'd be like, no, you guys play, so I can just sit here and watch you guys play while we're going down the road. But yeah, there's some other platforms. Twitter can be good. I know that Twitter has tried things, and it's actually, I think, still one of the better platforms for live interaction. That's probably its most usefulness now, that like the NFL did some tests with them, and they're doing more original content. So I think you can try different ones and see what works with your fan base, because everyone has different fans. But Twitter, for Facebook and YouTube are the biggest ones. Twitter's doing some stuff, but Facebook and YouTube are probably the ones where your fans will know what to do most easily and may have more monetization options.
Okay, so just probably focus on those ones?
Yeah. That's what I would recommend. Find one that works for you and focus on it.
And if you're back home Labor Day weekend, pop over to X-Fest and say hi to everybody.
All right. Okay. What town are you in?
I'm in Mukilteo.
I don't know where that is.
It's 20 minutes north of Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys. Hey, guys. Quick two-part question. One, can I take a selfie with you guys later? Two, you have any tips for things I can do with live streams? I know you mentioned the like reward things, and obviously there's playing songs, but something about it, I feel like I should add more to it.
Yeah. Yes, on the selfies. What are we charging, $100 for selfies? Is that what we're charging today?
We pay you.
Yeah, that's right.
Just tag us, please. Yeah.
You go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any like easy answer to that, but it's like, I think if you think about what your music means to you, where it came from, what it's trying to say, you can find other things to broadcast to the world about that instead of just playing the song. So it could be everything I'm writing right now is very... political in nature, hopefully not preachy, but so I've been thinking about like how can I be expressive of my beliefs without being preachy in a in a verbal way. So whenever I start recording these songs, I'll probably try to make a series of that or just use some of that context that I'm just telling people before I play the song or something. But yeah, I don't know, trivia
and it's,
tons of
it's
things
important
you could do.
Note that some of these things may not be for you. If you are really camera shy, live streaming may not work if you feel like awkward in front of the camera. I kind of do. When the camera pulls up, it's just kind of, what do I do? So I think, just try different things. Try like, here's a song story. I'm going to tell you about a song, what this song means. Or just think about, one of the notes I had that I forgot to mention was like, think about it like reality TV. You know, people love reality TV, and there's confessionals. There's other things where it feels like you're in on a conversation, or maybe live streaming from the studio. If you got a record coming up, like every day at this time, we're going to be live streaming from the studio. Mm-hmm. So I just, think about I would also follow some other bands that might be doing some of those things and see what they're doing and just try stuff. It's okay to fail. Just don't keep doing it if it's not working.
Well, and I also think it's okay to think outside of just music too. Like if you love cooking, like maybe you talk about something every Friday while you're cooking dinner or something. I don't know. Like whatever your other interests are, I think if people like your music, they're gonna want to know about you as sort of a larger person than just the artist.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Cool. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Hey.
Hello.
What's up?
My name's David Page. I'm a rock musician from Chicago. My question is, I have my band name is David Page, and so do I go live from my Facebook band profile, which has a decent number of followers, but has no reach because Facebook algorithm doesn't like band profiles, or do I go from my personal profile, which I don't necessarily want certain followers following?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you're definitely... The problem with building it up under your personal profile is I believe they still have the 5,000-person cap anyway. Right. So if you get... if you start acting like a business, like, an artist pursuing a career, it can suddenly cap you off.
Well, I think people can still follow you at that point. They just can't, like, be your friend, which is fine with me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did.
Matt
5,000 is plenty of friends for you.
Yeah, I don't need any more friends.
You have a suggestion on this, don't you?
You should.
Do you want to
jump on the mic there, Matt, if you're gonna give the suggestion.
Well, if you insist. Thank you, Chris. I'm Matt Wheeler, and so I have a fair amount of crossover of, like, I'll make posts on my personal page and also my band's page. But so the way I solve this is my band name has my name at the front of it. It's Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart, and so that way, you know, you can find Matt Wheeler, but if you want the band stuff, you go over to Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart. And that way, you know, I kind of get the best of both worlds. I'll share between the two things.
Which one do you broadcast from, though? That's because I remember I'd asked you that before.
I'm sorry. I totally missed it. You guys want to edit down to this point where, thanks, guys. So, I've experimented with both things. I do Facebook Live pop-up shows, usually with a theme. Like, one time I did three Iron and Wine cover songs just because. I was thinking of one of them. I was like, I haven't done a show online in a while. Let's do this. And I broadcast, I mix and match. I've tried it from my Matt Wheeler page and also from Matt Wheeler and Vintage Heart, the band page. I feel like you're more likely to have people run into it while you're actually doing it if you do it from your personal page. I've got like 3,500 friends as opposed to like band likes is about half of that, not to mention the algorithm wise. So I tend to try it from my personal page. Now, once the video is done, I'll share it over to the band page so I have something to do with that.
Well, that's a good idea because it does save to your videos in Facebook. So.
Right. Oh, and the thing about the graphic, like when I did the Iron and Wine one, I had my vinyl, I had the cover. Like when it went live, it was that. Of course, I also sort of look like that. So so I moved and I'm like, hey, guys, it's Matt Wheeler. Anyway, and you can find that because it's posted on Facebook. So. Right.
Thanks.
Hi, guys. I'm Nico Padden. I'm a folk rock singer-songwriter from Queens, New York. Long-time listener, first-time caller. seriously, I love your podcast. And my question is about YouTube channels and like the difference between like recorded, edited YouTube videos, which it seems like a lot of people rose to prominence, like YouTubers, like with that maybe like 6 years ago, and that the people who are famous on YouTube are like established and have a million followers already, and that like trying to build a YouTube channel now it seems like it's more saturated. So I'm just wondering if you have an opinion about, is focusing maybe on live streaming more easy to kind of build yourself up now because perhaps like the people who are the famous YouTubers are kind of established and the market may be capped. Yeah. I'm just wondering. No,
there's still plenty of room for more on YouTube. I think if you want to build an audience like YouTube, on YouTube, you have to really go and learn the platform. And because it's not just about, hey, this is some observations of what we see people doing on YouTube that those guys are sharing when they were talking. They're designing the platform to be a certain way because they want to sell ads. Mm-hmm. And so when you use the platform the way it's designed, where it's more like a show, content is serial and typically on a schedule, like a trailer video and it's decked out, their algorithm will start sharing your videos more. Mm-hmm. If you have videos that are in sort of a sweet spot of content, the algorithm will share it more. And so you have to really take those things into account and do them to use the platform to really drive your channel. But then you got to have good serial content. I mean, you've got to...
like something original that maybe someone hasn't done before.
Yeah,
or
and it might be good to think of some theme. And so it's not, if it's just your artist channel, it may be harder or a longer road. But like what you were saying about... maybe it's some cooking and music kind of thing, like some combo
I'm
where
a terrible cook. Well,
maybe that
could be
the
awesome.
Show.
Do it. And then have people eat what you make at the end of the show, and they can like
they make ratings, and it's like
See, I would watch that.
Awesome. Awesome.
And I think you alluded to this, but the most important metric for YouTube's algorithm isn't view count. It's watch duration or whatever they call it. Like the longer you're keeping your viewers watching that video, that's what's going to start surfacing it in other people's.
Yeah. It's important you'd rather have 10 views that people watched all 2 minutes than 100 views where they watched 5 seconds. There's buying views is a waste of money. You can do it, and it doesn't help anybody, and it actually can really hinder your performance on YouTube. So focus on engaging content that people watch all the way through. And the sweet spot, you know, is like 2 to 6 minutes. You don't have to be sitting there for an hour. Doing something for like 30 seconds is going to be a challenge because people want to at least have some sort of, you know, nugget to
grasp. They want
a bad dinner to smell the aroma of it. And
my husband would differ on that.
Hi, I'm Emma Back, and I'm an Avant Folk live looping artist, vocalist, violinist. And I love your podcast. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, thank you for being here.
And I have a three-part question. So I play exclusively house concerts, and I do some touring, but a lot less than I used to, and I make more money, which is great, and build more connections. And my question is, I want to start doing more of the streaming, live streaming, and I've experimented with live streaming house concerts, but there is a struggle of keeping the connection authenticity at a house concert while I'm managing the tech of streaming mm-hmm. and trying to talk to the online audience, and it just can feel like it takes away from the show. So I wonder if you have advice for managing that. And then also, would it be better to do like a regular content show that's separate from the house concerts that are maybe shorter and people can engage with than doing like a whole stream of a concert? So wondering what you recommend. And then also if you have suggestions, if I do live stream house concerts, tech setups to use.
My thought is that you should not be doing that during a house concert because I feel like there's something very sacred about those events for the hosts and the musicians and everyone involved. And it's like, it's so much about just being there and being intimate and connected and like not, so I feel like not breaking that while having to answer, you know, whatever Facebook Live stuff or whatever. That's my opinion. And then absolutely do a similar thing just for the streaming audience. And I feel like you can find a way to make that intimate as well. And maybe it'll be more intimate then because you're not also trying to entertain people in front of you. Is that?
Yeah. Great.
That's my suspicion on that, yeah.
I think that's sound advice.
And I forget what the third question was.
Well, it had to do with if I were to do that at house concerts, like better tech setup. So yeah, great, thank you.
We're 5 minutes over already, and I still want to get a group picture, and I need to be in there by the start of that next session. What's that? Can we... I'll get like one more question, then a group picture, and Chris and I will
really
be
fast
around.
Question.
Yes.
Okay, so I was in Rick's class yesterday about Facebook Live sessions, and he said completely the opposite of what you said. He said, when you start, do music right off the bat. And you said, don't do music right off the bat. So if you're not doing music.
That's not what I said.
I just mean like leave a little window so that someone can
click
the volume. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Like don't just be like, here I am, like just a 5 seconds or something. I don't know. And enough so when it pops up, I can unmute.
But what's good to start with? If you're not going to start with music, you're not just going to sit there and go,
well,
I'm waiting
maybe
for
you
these
have
people
this,
to watch.
Have a sign up that says, you know, this is Tuesday cover song and today's song is Depeche Mode, whatever.
Okay.
And then I can see it and be like, oh, I want to watch that. What is it? Okay, cool. And now the guitar is getting out. And
it could be like 2 seconds.
Okay.
And I think Rick would probably agree with this because I heard him say that, and I don't think that's what he was referring to. I've seen one where the live stream's up and there's nobody in the room, and you're kind of like, what's going on? Then you see someone like setting up stuff. I'm like, did I just accidentally get into some webcam at somebody's house? What's going on here? And then some dude walks by. I'm like, now I'm really intrigued. What is going on? And I'm like, who's watching me? And then, so I've seen people do that. So that's not what Chris was saying. Is just like, a lot of times there's like a half second or 1 second delay from when you actually, the thing goes live.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's like, don't be in the, like, hit record and be like, nah, like, understand that it takes a second or two for it to engage.
Okay.
And so you don't cut off, like, so you're saying, hey, everybody, how are you doing? And all they hear is, doing, you know, you're like.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. We need to take a selfie real quick. No, let everyone climb. Come up here.
Oh, okay.
We'll get
and
your
question. And, yes. Then I got about a 3 second.
Okay, everyone come up here.
My question is really short, too.
Let's see.
How are we going to do this?
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you have something about the conference that you'd like to share, feel free to call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or just go to the website, the podcast website, and you can leave a comment in the show notes right there. If you've got any stories or interesting things that happened to you while in Nashville, I'd love to share it on the podcast. So don't hesitate to do that. And we will be sending out information about ticket sales for next year's conference. I know that feels like it's a whole year away, but you will save serious money if you get in early. So be looking for that information in the next month or so. Also, I should mention that if you weren't able to attend the conference, or if you're at the conference and you weren't able to attend everything all at once, which you can't physically do, we did live stream a lot of the things from the main room, and that is available on our Facebook page and our YouTube page. So if you go to the CD Baby Facebook page or the CD Baby YouTube page, you will find those videos there. And I did get audio recorded for everything, or about everything, and I'm going to be releasing a lot of that content down the podcast feed over the next few months. So be looking for that as well. Well, that's going to do it. I'm going to go rest my voice and just bask in the afterglow of such an amazing event, an amazing weekend, and can't wait to see all of you again. And I'll catch you next time on the next episode of the podcast. All right, see ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.